all across America and around the world. This is Veterans Radio.
This is Veterans Radio.
Welcome to Veterans Radio. I am Jim Fossone. I'm the officer of the deck today. We've got some great programs for you. I think you'll find very interesting. We always want to remind you, you can find more about Veterans Radio at its Facebook site or by going to veteransradio.net, where we're on the web 24/7. You can find a lot of our podcasts there as well. We post new ones every Tuesday, so you can get a new story, a new interview, something you didn't know before by going to veteransradio.net. And before we get started, we want to thank our sponsors. First up, we want to thank National Veteran Business Development Council, NVBDC.org. It was established to certify both service-disabled and veteran-owned businesses. You'll find out how they can help your business by going to NVBDC.org. We want to thank Legal Help for Veterans. Legal Help for Veterans fights for veterans' disability rights all across the nation. You can reach them at 800-693-4800 or on the web at legalhelpforveterans.com. We're talking to Ben Kessling of the Wall Street Journal. He's a Marine. He's an author. He wrote a book called Bravo Company, an Afghanistan Deployment and Its Aftermath. We've interviewed him on that book. But along the way, an article that he wrote for the Wall Street Journal caught my attention, and I wanted to talk to him about that as well. So Ben wrote, U.S. military teaches living off the land to feed future warriors. Ben, how did this idea, or how did this come about to even get on your radar to write this interesting article?
Well, Jim, I'm all the time on Twitter and on other parts of social media, just kind of looking at things, just keeping an eye on what's going on. And I saw in passing on an Instagram post something about a field butchery course for soldiers, and I thought, oh, that sounds cool. I'm going to send an email out to this guy and see what's all about. And come to find out, there's the person I emailed, his name's Jason Nauert. He's out in Colorado, and he teaches field butchery for all manner of troops, Marines, soldiers, airmen, and he teaches people how to break down an animal from a living, breathing being, and to use the entire animal for feeding a squad or a company or whatever, and using all parts of it. I thought, wow, that's really fascinating. And then I got to looking at sort of some of the doctrinal stuff that's happening in the military related to this, and I've realized that the military is trying to rediscover this art of military foraging.
Yeah, it's really an interesting, because it's such a throwback. It's now, it's the present now, right? We've done 20 years of war where you fly in all the food and you got long convoys of food, but you begin thinking, what if we couldn't do that? What if special operations are out in the field? Talk about what they were, what as you say, doctrinally, what are they thinking about as they start putting folks through this field butcher course?
Right. Well, so... For the past 20 years in Iraq and Afghanistan, we've essentially had logistical dominance over the areas where we've been fighting, and so much so that chow halls in Iraq and Afghanistan became known for having crab legs and ice cream at them. Which, I mean, if you're in the middle of war and you've got access to fresh ice cream, That's the stuff that novels, war novels are written about. Yeah. And the Green Berets, they are having a certain reason why they're doing this. They have their cooks go through this course to learn how to cook animals, to break them down and properly butcher them and cook them, so that they can avoid going through some of the gastrointestinal issues that sometimes affect the American gut when eating local food. And so they're able to sort of be a little more self-sufficient in cooking their own meat. But this led me to looking at the way the Marine Corps has started using some of these techniques, and the Marine Corps has started planning a bit for in case they're not able to have a full logistical train available to them. So say you got a company out in the middle of nowhere. Well, they're not going to have quick access to have MREs delivered to them all the time. How are they going to live off the land? And they're gonna try to do ethical foraging, or that's at least the theory. So what most people think of when they think of a foraging, right, is like going around in a loincloth and like spearing frogs and stuff and like survivalism, right?
Eating weeds and that sort of stuff, yeah.
Yeah, right. Yeah, exactly. Well, that's not what foraging is in sort of a military doctrinal way. Because if you've got infantrymen and infantrywomen, essentially the warfighters, going out, wearing war paint and trying to gig frogs and catch squirrels, you've lost all your combat power, right? So the warfighters are supposed to do the warfighting. They're in defensive positions, they're patrolling, they're doing all that. And then the logisticians and the cooks and whatnot, they're doing what's known as military foraging, which is living sustainably off the land that they're at. And that's not living sustainably off of like just nature itself. That's living sustainably on the entire land ecosystem that they're around. So for instance, if I'm close to a village, then I can go down to a local farmer and maybe buy some animals from them. I can find the local supply that supplies the grocery stores around the area and buy dry goods from them. And I can use that sort of local economy to purchase things that I then bring back and use to prepare food for like a Marine Corps company. And that way you have sustainability. You're working with the local populace. You're doing so in a way that links you more closely to them rather than alienates you, and you're able to do it without having to rely upon MREs being flown in from, you know, like from the middle of Nebraska or something all the way across the world to a Pacific island, and you cut out a lot of those logistical hiccups. Now, there's a long way to go before this becomes entrenched doctrine in the military, but it's something that we're thinking about right now, especially as we look toward potential conflict with great powers like Russia and especially China in the Pacific.
Well, it's one of the things that when I read the article, and I told Ben earlier that when I was getting ready to interview him on Bravo Company, I had pulled down this article and I, you know, put these things in my bag to read over the weekend. And I'm reading this because it was just an interesting article. And then I realized, hey, wait a minute, I'm going to talk to this guy. So, but the Russia-Ukraine thing came to my mind as I'm reading this. You know, Russia got a lot of grief early on because their logistics trains didn't exist and they couldn't supply, you know, food, ammunition, fuel. Well, going to the local economy became something that we got a little sniff of in the news reporting, and I'm thinking, well, this is a little bit like that situation where you find yourself there and you've got to do something. The army, if you will, moves on its stomach, right? You've got to be able to feed the troops. So did you also, when writing, you see this kind of old is new and replay out of the Russian invasion of Ukraine?
Yeah, well, that came up in when I was talking to folks about foraging and what it means to forage, because, you know, through most of history, when you forage, what it means is essentially you're taking whatever you want off the local land and the local populace will just have to deal with it. And part of what the Marine Corps especially is trying to teach is how can you do this in a way that isn't just stealing from locals? How can we do this in a way that maybe we work with locals in a way? Now, I mean, practical application of this comes, is it even possible for this to practically be put into place? That's a major question, but at least they're trying to think through how to do this, because what we've seen in Ukraine with Russian troops is, hey, they run out of food. So they go and they loot local stores, and that's I mean, hey, you know, you can't put much of a fine shine on it. That's the way foraging often looks when it's time to do it, is people going in and stealing stuff. And that quickly goes from taking foodstuffs that you need to, you know, stories of Russian troops taking appliances from people's houses and whatnot. And to be able to come up with a way that to get those supplies and to keep men and women in uniform from doing things that they aren't supposed to, and also to keep the locals from getting angry, because as we all have also seen in Ukraine, Ukrainians aren't necessarily helping these Russian soldiers on the ground very, very much. One of the men I interviewed for this, a scholar said, the locals are helping deliver javelins to the Russians, but not delivering them in the way that the Russians like too much.
Yeah. Well, and that's the language about ethical foraging and living sustainably and working with the local economy, is that you're inherent in that, and I think inherent in the American approach would be, hey, if you're supplying us dry goods or live animals or fish, we're paying for it. We're not just taking it.
Yeah, and again, like, in, you know, when push comes to shove and this becomes practical reality, it's going to be very difficult to, I mean, it's going to be very difficult for any military to do that. But to lay that doctrinal groundwork of what's right and what's wrong could mean the difference between local commanders doing something that that allows them to have some sort of a connection with the local populace in a way that they wouldn't if they maybe aren't trained in this and haven't been told over and over again that there's a moral, you know, a moral compass. You need to set your moral compass to this North Star,
right?
And try to do your best to be ethical as you go about doing this foraging.
Well, there's got to, you know, again, you got to be able to tell the troops there's a right way to do it, and train on that, and then hope it gets implemented as such. How long has this program been going on, and did you get a sense of, hey, we're going to do this, we've done it for a year or two, and then we're going to stop, or do you see this having enough legs?
Well, so it started in 2014, actually, with the idea that the Green Berets, especially with wanting to have cooks who can help them supplement their meals in when they're dealing with deployments with local troops in the countries they're deployed with, they want to supplement their meals with fresh meat, and to do it as healthily as possible and as hygienically as possible. And so the Green Berets have been doing this since 2014, teaching their cooks. And, you know, when cooks and support personnel who are with the Green Berets often aren't Green Berets. They're soldiers who have been tasked with supporting the Green Berets. And they've started sending their cooks through this course, and it's gone to it's not uncommon for Green Berets to not necessarily be too happy about having to take cooks along sometimes on missions,
right?
Because, hey, you know, it's like maybe a wasted spot. Is this a member of the team? It's not even a Green Beret, what the heck? And it's come to the point where the soldiers who have gone through these courses on how to do field butchery, that Green Beret teams are actually asking to take these soldiers along with them because of the value add they have to the team by being able to be a full service chef out there, and with you know, some local dry goods, rice, beans, maybe some vegetables, you're able to get fresh meat, have it prepared hygienically and you know, tastes pretty good. So it doesn't look like this program's going away anytime soon with the Green Berets. Now, who knows what's going to happen with conventional forces, with Marines and conventional Army units, if this idea of foraging is gonna get legs? But there are a couple people, you know, there are some proponents for it in the services who are looking to add it to curriculum and to doctrine.
It's an interesting way to make that aspect of feeding the troops maybe a little more nimble, maybe a little more combat effective in a particular local environment. Hey, Ben Kessling, Wall Street Journal reporter, great article, and thanks for sharing it with us here on Veterans Radio and giving us some of your insights.
Absolutely. Thank you very much for your time. I appreciate it.
And I want to thank everybody for listening to Veterans Radio today. I am Jim Fossone. It's been a pleasure to be your host. I'm a veterans disability lawyer at Legal Help for Veterans, and you can reach us at 800-693-4800 or legalhelpforveterans.com on the web. You can follow Veterans Radio on Facebook and listen to its podcasts and internet radio shows by going to veteransradio.net. And until next time, you are dismissed.
If you have a VA claim denied by the Board of Veterans Appeals, contact Legal Help for Veterans at 1-800-693-4800. They're experts in handling cases before the U.S. Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims. Their number again, 1-800-693-4800.
We would again want to thank our national sponsors, the National Veterans Business Development Council, NVBDC.org, VA Ann Arbor Health Care System, the Vietnam Veterans of America Charles S. Kettles Chapter, Ann Arbor, Michigan, VFW Graf O'Hara Post 423 in Ann Arbor, and the American Legion Presscorn Post 46, also in Ann Arbor. We appreciate all your support. You can go to veteransradio.net, click on the sponsor level, and continue to support keeping Veterans Radio on the air. And until next time, you are dismissed.